public dreamers, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, if we provide the metaphors, trickster genius will provide the molecules. So, we welcome new ancient ally, Alain Ramos, twinned, kinned, esoteric, pragmatic, mystic, Jungian practitioner of hypnotherapy based in Charlottesville, that we may engage all of our skills to cooperate with nature's guiding genius, to compost corruption and delusion into nutrient for a renaissance of reverent ingenuity, activism partnered with nature, and the sacrament of impeachment to consecrate. We're not expecting miracle of collective conscience, but we are willing. Ellen's website, splendid website, is ellenramos.com. That's ellenramos.com. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you, Caroline.
So, we are calling in all ally ancestors, and we had mentioned Carl Jung, and you sent me a great episode on Carl Jung and conspiracies and all, but do you want to call him in or any other ally ancestors, human, animal, mythological?
Indeed I do, and I'm always energized by hearing the wonderful music that precedes you into the ethers. And yes, Carl Jung and the animals, the energies and the powers of the ancestors are particularly important, I think, in this moment. And something about the spirit of the flying birds in the air is important to call in. Just to bring everyone together on different levels of reality and experience.
Right, and we are going to aspire to direct attention to many things. The capital is fenced in, but not from birds, right? And we go, let every adversity be a freedom in some form. So there is the, you know, the walls, you know the Trump did build a wall around the Capitol, and we could go grr, 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 or we could go, birds. The many, many springs around the Capitol, there are secret, powerful places, waters of life, you know, around
Indeed.
And underneath the Capitol, and maybe they will replenish.
Yes. What water is such a powerful element, isn't it? I think one of the most powerful. It can pretty much move or be with anything. And you're the one who told me earlier that there are springs, hidden waters of life, which is such a wonderful thing to know. One of our connections is our Washington nativism. We were actually born in the nation's capital, which is somewhat rare, I believe. And so I loved hearing about this fact, a fun fact, a deep fact that I was not aware of. So thank you for bringing that in.
Right, and our conversing has stirred up so much. There is a really great book called The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital by David Ovison, the pen name for Fred Gettings. And Fred Gettings, an ancestor now, alas, but he was one of the great serious, for sure, scholars of esoteric imagery, and his book is really great. And just to bring up, you know, how we want to liberate Uranus, the dedication embedded in the many monuments, statues, buildings of Washington, D.C., and we go, they're awaiting our animation. And, you know, just I'm remembering, you know, for some reason, I don't know how this happened, but serendipitous synchronicity is abounding. Some years back, Code Pink allies bestowed on me and wonderful Gail and another person. They said, "Here's a demonstration of many thousands of people. Do with it what you will." So I dusted off my copy of David Ovison's Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And Washington, D.C. has more dedicated zodiacs than any other city in the world. So we gathered at one of those, and I sort of explained, I go, this is not a usual protest. This is a march for democracy, right? It's a magical thing. And so we went to the archives, which were built on top of an old slave block where the Constitution is, you know, and the Declaration of Independence. And we unfurled the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and unredacted them, right? And outside the archives, there's a statue of Isis, and she's holding a child and sheaves of wheat, and she's pouring forth the waters of life. And so we gathered there, and we did what the Masons did when they consecrated her: cornmeal, water, prayers, you know. And then we went to the treasury and inhaled the money and imaginably redistributed it. And then we went to right in front of the Capitol. See, a lot of the statues are getting pressed now. There's a beautiful statue of America weeping on the shoulders of history for her dead. So we did homage there. And then we stood in front of the reflecting pool.
And
we all did.
And reflected.
And we reflected back to Congress. Mirror, here's what's terrible. Turn it into a window. Here's the vision of the desirable. Turn the window into a door. Let's go, right? And many people said, oh, we want to do more like that. There was only one grumpy guy who kept trying to provoke the police and be kind of gurry and whatever. And it's like, oh, well, come along. But everybody else really got it. And so I just want to bring that back. You know, we want to bring in all of our skills and entertain many possibilities.
Can you say two more words for those of us who are not as deeply astrological as you? Could you say a little bit more about liberating the energy of Uranus?
Well, Uranus is our ally. It's nature's genius mind. And right now, as we convene, you know, entertain the possibility. Mercury retrograde, reflecting. May we all be at the reflecting pool, has a quintile, a beautiful 72-degree angle to Uranus. So Mercury is our mind. Uranus is the mind of nature. They're in cahoots.
And
this whole year is animating what so many of us are dedicated to, which is the reweaving of Aquarian community and how we define that, with the mind of nature and the communities of all of our kin, you know, to weave that back and forth. There is something this Friday. Excuse me. I just got an email from Greenpeace and Jane Fonda. It starts, the Biden administration has come out with all guns blazing when it comes to the climate crisis. And I go, maybe change the metaphor. but it is something for everyone. Join us Friday, February 5th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, Facebook Live for Fire Drill Friday. So I just wanted to let people know about that. Telepathic work is good. But yeah, no, and part of our animating what's being so generously proffered to us is we now have Venus in Aquarius at the degree, which is, excuse me, Council of Ancestors. Young leader listens to their voices. So to the ancestors, we're all young, and young too. We're all young and young. So calling in all help, all ally ancestors, you know, everyone to help. We are humbled. We are humbled as humans. But I loved also, since we're inviting in Carl Jung, and the link that you sent me to this Jungian life in the podcast about conspiracy, it just says, in times of uncertainty, truth is hard to discern. Collective cohesion frays and social factions become embattled. Unmediated shadow then seeks expression through the archetypal realm and takes on extraordinary attributes. Persecutory mythologies arise, for big psychic situations need big stories to compensate for big feelings of anxiety, powerlessness, and marginalization. Insecurities are projected onto the outer world as clandestine enemies of mythic proportions, alien rulers, government cabals, and other images of secret domination. Understanding conspiracy theories as symbolic expressions of unconscious contents can allow us to take them seriously without taking them literally. We may then respond with consciousness and empathy instead of judgment. and begin to shift the collective psychic field towards wholeness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, really good stuff. And I thank you for saying more about Uranus and nature's mind, and we're reflecting nature's mind. It makes me think of mirror neurons and how when, you know, neurons are in sync between people or nature and the individual, or the individual and deeper parts of themselves, there is a reflection going on, and there is something in that continued reflection that grows, that becomes animated and alive and juicy. So I love that idea of thinking about nature's mind and our individual mind, and this being a propitious time to reflect on one another in a way that is alive and that amplifies. One amplifies the other.
Yeah, and we were speaking about the backstage about the magic of radio, which it is, and we're telepathically in cahoots, and we can all imagine ourselves maybe at the in front of the reflecting pool in front of Congress, all of us, going a mirror, window, door, inviting in conscience. You know, again, we're not expecting miracles, but we're willing, right, of mm-hmm. conscience to come on in, and integrity and Saturn binding. Yeah, so just to say a smidge more about Uranus, it's nature's liberating trickster ingenuity that loves against all odds. It's a part of us and nature that comes alive because it's resilience, it's seeds that sprout after cataclysm, it's a coyote, raven, it's used to being trapped, and so it's a great escape artist, right? And that part mm-hmm. of us is humming inside and eager now to come alive if we are willing. And we go, oh, well, we are. And maybe, you know, our journey, you reminded me that we met at the Monroe Institute, which is great, and I had hosted Joe McMoneagle after that, one of the Army's great remote viewing experts, and then you had reminded me about your group that was gathering to prevent the pipeline. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Ah, yes. So, you know, there are many activist traditions, and often when I think about activism, I think about it not being reflective of me, of what I do. I'm a little internal, and I only occasionally do I march. I did come to the march right after the past president, may his name never be uttered again, was inaugurated. But there are other ways to be activist. There are other ways to connect with what is happening in the outside worlds and bridge the inner and outer worlds. And so the idea of doing more quiet kinds of activism, or activism at other layers, deeper layers, more unseen layers, is to in a way do what you talked about with Uranus, and that is to connect to what's happening in the outer world, but in one's inner world, and to do it as a group. There's something about working in groups that amplifies experience. So it becomes very clear when people are marching, or they're in the streets, and they're kind of concentrating energy for a cause, and they're out in their physical form with signs and all that. You can feel the power of that group. But group power also exists on unseen levels. And when you amplify those unseen group powers with the powers of nature and other allies in the unseen world, then many, many things are possible, and you kind of invite those possibilities in. So that's what we did. There were a small group of us who were who felt that the pipeline that Dominion wanted to build right near the Monroe Institute and through the George Washington National Forest was really not in the best interests of the collective. And so we gathered and in a small group. We invited certain allies that were not with us, you being the chief among them. You were not physically present, but you were there as we gathered. And we really simply concentrated on bringing in the energy that was for the best possible outcome for all. And approximately a year, maybe a little more later, it was last spring or summer, Dominion announced that they were not going to do the pipeline because it wasn't economically feasible.
Yeah.
So it's a way of using group power, which is also what is at the base of democracy, right? Democracy is people power. It's using the power of the subtle group to amplify and kind of make something bigger and more powerful. So I love doing that kind of activist work, and I've actually done research on it. So we can talk about that later if you want. But that was essentially the subtle activism that took place.
That's great. No, because I have not yet tired of quoting a psychological study that said our brains are democratic. To our brains, invisible and visible are equally real. That, you know, communing with an invisible anything is just the same as having a cup of tea in the kitchen with a good friend. And it's like, oh, that's great. It's very good news for all of us. And so there's backstage and on stage, and each according to everyone's unique contribution. Because now, you know, what is afforded us is, you know, this Saturn dedication, you know, strengthens our internal signal. So we're more likely to be danced into place where we can do the most good backstage or on stage, you know, to contribute our considerable gifts. So we love that. So that was great, and we want to keep working with that. The dissolving of the Dominion pipeline. You said it went poof, poof, yes. Poof is a wonderful thing. Poof. Poof. You know, I think, it's also, you know, composting or poofing or whatever, and not so much fighting, because that's, we strengthen whatever we fight, and it's like, there we go, and using the metaphors of nature, I think nature contains poof, and nature certainly loves composting, so that's all really excellent. But also what you said is something worthy of underlining for all of us that we then can amplify into an invocative prayer. May all that is destructive, all destructive to nature and to humans, and it's the same, be too expensive. You know, a couple weeks back I hosted Dune Lankard and Sarah James of the Arctic Witch in Elder, and we were, you know, delighted that the nefarious plan to auction off drilling rights in the Arctic was a flop. Nobody bid. It was too expensive, too much trouble. And that's also for all of us, too. It was too much trouble. They go, well, people are going to be protesting that, and it's expensive, so let's make it expensive. Let's make all up to no good. And in that sense, see, liberate everybody, because it's not good for, you know, humans or anyone or even corporations to get away with harm and destruction, to not be dedicated to collective well-being. So that's super great. And then
indeed.
I
guess I wanted just to bring in the other side a little bit, is that sometimes that energy that comes in through, you know, through corporations or destruction, sometimes it's educational, because we often fall asleep in our privilege or whatever we have that is comfortable. And so often these things that happen are wake-up calls to our system that something is happening that that we need to pay attention to something that otherwise we might sleep through. So in that way, I hope for us to divine the signals more quickly so that things don't have to become so concrete in the world before we realize something's wrong.
Right. And the moon is in Scorpio now, and it's part of what's called a fixed T-square. There's 8 fixed planets. The moon in Scorpio squares the Aquarius planets, which square the Taurus planets, which oppose back. So both you and I have Scorpio midheavens, which is kind of what we do in the world, detectives and all. And I love ally Kathy Gallagher saying in our last conversation, she said, "Now is the time when evil forgot to hide." And I go, "Is that a Hungarian saying?" She was like, no, it's a me saying. And we go, "Oh, that's great." So in a dance, you know, time for us all to come out of hiding too, right? Ollie Ollie income free, all pragmatic mystics, you know, Inquisition not exactly over, but safer for everyone to come on out, to uncringe, right? To uncringe in front of any finger wagging, imagined, judgmental, societal thing going, no. Because part of the liberator, the Uranus genius that is available to us all right now is, you know, the trickster hero, which we want, is interested in liberating women, liberating the land, liberating men, liberating the community, liberating the entire circumstance, you know, liberating even the tyrant, not counting on it, but willing, you know, like Scheherazade in the Arabian Nights or the 1001 Nights or High John the Conqueror, the great trickster redeemer, folk hero of the South. And we go, right, Ollie Ollie income free, you know, everybody come on out, you know, of hiding. Let's throw hiding into the cauldron. Privacy and solitude are wonderful freedoms and sacraments, right? But hiding is a prison, and they can look the same, but they feel different. So we all know. And so, you know, for all of us, really, in a sense, that together, group radio ritual, let's throw hiding into the cauldron, you know, centuries and centuries, really millennia, and ladle out autonomy, you know, and contribution of gifts to the community, and the power of boundaried solitude as necessary, you know. So, yeah, and we can keep that going, and everybody, you know, participating and listening can think of what shall we throw into the cauldron, you know, and standards of discernment to ladle out. I like, you know, everything into the cauldron with the standards. Does it guide people to their own autonomy? Is it equal Mars and Venus, men and women, equal humans and the rest of our kin? Can the truth be said without cringing? Is trickster welcome? Yes, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in for another round of bubbling. It's only good for things to be bubbled in the cauldron, so I like that. And in keeping, because you'd sent so many great clues and links, you'd mentioned the great Times article by Michael Goldhaber about our attention, yes, being co-opted, right? And anything you want to say about that? Because it's, you know, how shall we have the freedom, remember the freedom, Uranus, of how we direct our time and our attention? And then just one last thing, and let me toss it to you. But I love the word chronophagic. It means time eating, right? And that's a good intro to what Michael Goldhaber, denizen of Berkeley, hi there, had to say. Do you want to amplify a little more of that?
I guess what I found in reading this article was, you know, a maxim of what you attend to, what you focus and pay attention on tends to grow, and what you don't attend to tends to, can also grow in a not helpful direction. But I liked what they were talking about, the idea of how things, in this particular case, they were talking about the internet, social media, how attending to that, how giving that your attention can actually pull you away from what's important for yourself. And it's almost like it takes you into another world where you lose contact with your own internal landscape, with your own sense of your own ecology, the ecology that lives inside of you, and you become colonized by the world that you come into. And so I think that is one way of looking at these things that tend to fragment our attention, and thinking about, is this something that is I want to place my attention to? Is it growthful? Is it creative? Is it helping to liberate myself? Or is it playing into something that the collective it's actually a collective pulling you away from what's important for your own inner sense of balance and well-being?
Right. And the dogs are chiming in, but there we have
yes.
that. And right. Hello, dogs. Remember, we made
a deal.
They agree. They're agreeing. They're going, and furthermore, okay, so we work with everything. So just a little bit from that article, New York Times article, and more than ironically, I did post it on Facebook, right? So it's a challenge. Well, everything can be liberating or imprisoning. And one of the quotes from Howard Rheingold, it says, attention, which is really a Saturn focus, is a limited resource. So pay attention to where you pay attention. And then it begins by saying Michael Goldhaber is the internet prophet you've never heard of. Here's a short list of things he saw coming. The complete dominance of the internet, increased shamelessness in politics, terrorists co-opting social media, the rise of reality television, personal websites, oversharing, I love that term, personal essay, fandoms and online influencer culture, along with the near destruction of our ability to focus. Most of this came to him in the mid-80s when Mr. Goldhaber, a former theoretical physicist, had a revelation. He was obsessed at the time what he felt was an information glut, that there was simply more access to news, opinion, and forms of entertainment than one could handle. His epiphany was this: one of the most finite resources in the world is human attention. To describe its scarcity, he latched onto what was then an obscure term coined by a psychologist, the attention economy. Oh, that's really good. And I'll toss it back to you in a second, but it's so perfect for now. You know, and I've talked to so many people in which we confess that, you know, we take phones right to the point of sleep, and when we wake up, we sometimes look at the phone. I wonder what the weather is. Go outside. Go outside. It's the Uranus Taurus dynamic, and I'm thinking just entertaining possibilities going, oh, some exponential time, more time in nature in proportion to the time we spend in social media. Because it is. I mean, we can change things by the power of our group, by the power of this show, by the power of everybody listening. I would like it's an addiction. Sometimes I turn off the screen and then I back into the phone and then I slowly back into, you know, reading a book, right? But it's like, whoa. And I'm happy to change that, right? Because it's physical. I mean, it really is physical. It's hard to, it's a tractor beam, right? So are you pretty good at not being, you know, not looking at your phone when you wake up?
Oh, I used to be better. I'm recovering now. I think even though being attentive to my inner life and by extension helping others to be attentive to their inner life and ecology is my practice, I have to say I totally underestimated the impact of the last 4 years on my psyche, on my body, on my spirit. And as it was all winding down, I realized that I really was sleeping with my iPad next to me, and I would wake up and I would look and see, like, what is the new thing that's happening? What's the next stimulant? You know, it's really, it is kind of like an addiction in a way. It's like stimulating your nervous system. And in the past 2 weeks, as things have changed, I'm weaning myself off this stimulation to via electronics to the outer world. I mean, it's as if social media and other things were mediating my experience with the outside world. And so I wish I could say, oh yes, I'm clean. I eat well, and my entire, you know, kind of sensorium is sharp and clean. But I really have been realizing how far under I was, I was drawn really far into this underworld and undercurrent of information and kind of this. Right. I don't even know how to really totally talk about.
We're
going to
come right back to that. We're going to take our very short, usual Taj Mahal reminder break, just a little bit, and we'll be, and our wonderful guest, this is the Visionary Activist Show, and our wonderful guest this hour is Ellen Ramos, and her website is ellenramos.com, and we'll be right back after this very short public service announcement from Taj Mahal. Here we go.
Shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Chanty, chanty, come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our guest this hour is Ellen Ramos, a new ancient ally, Jungian practitioner, hypnotherapist based in Charlottesville. And we were just on, it's kind of perfect, right? The addictive power of where I guess the term was our attention gets kidnapped. That's, I think, what Michael Gold Hibbert said, attention hijacking, right? What's the point? And we'd been speaking about how radio really is different, because radio, you know, we're painting images with words, but it's everyone's autonomous imagination that gets to animate those. In that sense, it's got a great liberating quality. It's very different from TV. I mean, everything has its quirky place, but TV is sort of special and celebrity by its bias, but radio is like, here we all are, you know, in a Democratic council. Hi, how you doing? You know, and may it be that it is a liberator of imagination. I mean, everything can be liberating or imprisoning. But yeah, because you'd mentioned that, you know, you used to listen to radio dramas. I still do. I love, you know, Johnny Dollar, even though we've been snookered into supporting an insurance investigator. But it's quite wonderful old-time radio. But you used to love radio dramas as well?
Indeed, indeed. It is that theater of the imagination that, you know, there are other forms of communication and media that have different, as you say, different qualities to be appreciated. But radio is very much like what you were talking about earlier, where the brain doesn't really differentiate too much between what is real and what is imagined. And so that is a truism that is useful in active imagination. It's useful in hypnosis. It's useful in kind of going deeper into your mind, to connecting with your deeper mind and acting as if. And that is, it's a very, very powerful thing, because it's as if when you are imagining something, your neurons are firing as if they were experiencing that in the reality outside. So it's a very, very interesting phenomenon, and it's very powerful.
Right. As Francis Collins, head of NIH, demonstrated to a gathering at the Kennedy Center, he had an opera singer wired up to an MRI, and he asked her to sing, and we could see beautiful parts of her brain beautifully lit up, like, and then he said, "Now don't sing, just imagine singing," and the entire brain went,
yes.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
It's an interesting mystery. Imagining, it's not one's better or not, you know, but imagining engaged the entire brain and lit it up. It's like, oh.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And what you experience in the imaginal realm, in the realm of the brain, mediated through the brain as an organ of perception and through the nervous system as a system of kind of transmitting information and experience is really, really powerful. I mean, when you can grab hold of that power and use it for your own development, it's such a creative tool. It's this really wonderful way of thinking about creativity. And then, you know, I think of people who are differently abled, who have different learning styles, who have different ways of engaging their brain, their imagination, their senses, and things really open up then. There's a wealth of possibilities in people who, if you were looking at them through a kind of a regular lens, you might say, oh, well, I bet they have a difficult time doing this, that, or the other thing. But no. You know, it's kind of like when, I've forgotten his name. He's an ancestor now, but he was a neurologist. Such a wonderful person who wrote a series of books. The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
Oh, Oliver Sacks.
Oliver Sacks.
Yeah, wonderful human.
So wonderful. I mean, the way he brought in different ways that people's brains work. It's just fascinating.
He's somebody that's like, oh, I wish I'd known him. He was, you know, kind of a loner for much of his life, and then found his great love, you know, right towards the end. But I heard him give this great narration. He was very fond of LSD and a brilliant neuroscientist. And he said that once he was tripping on LSD, and he was like, oh, I really want indigo. And he said his entire being, suddenly there was this huge indigo, this black-violet color that saturated his body and his whole life. And he's like, thank you, thank you. And he said he never saw it again, but he was like, call and response, I asked for indigo, and it gave me indigo. That was really a fun person.
Yes.
So in that sense, it's like, well, what can we all do now for fun? And because I've been mentioning, I want to go back to the secret architecture of our nation's capital. We are, you know, on the edge, the launching, the something of to consecrate the sacrament of impeachment, right? And again, entertain the possibilities that there are qualities of intelligence, you know, that are embedded in the buildings that the Masons, you know. Well, let me just read a smidge here. You know, about David Ovenson's really great book, and the Masons approved, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, The Masons and the Building of Washington, D.C. And as other people had explained to me, there were intentions. They knew democracy was not actual, but it was intended. And so they put it in the buildings, in the rocks, in the stones, to await, you know, us, to animate this and to invite it back. So he says, most of the architects who designed the significant structures in Washington were Freemasons who incorporated their symbolism into their design. It is amazing, because I did go on the Afrocentric tour of Washington once, the only white person on the tour, which was a very, actually, positive, comfortable place to be. But there were so many things that were there that I hadn't seen before. Like, for all of us, there are Egyptian eyes over many, many portals. And the idea that Washington was designed, well, it's built on Plato's map of Atlantis, says George Orwell. So there's all this embedded there, awaiting. And it's like, experiment, experiment. Uranus is nature's experimental ingenuity. This is not working. Let's try this. You know, and so including Benjamin Franklin, as were several later presidents, you know, James A. Garfield, James Polk. And when President George Washington laid the cornerstone of the Capitol building in 1793, he wore a Masonic apron adorned with occult Masonic symbols and an image of the Zodiac. Zodiac. Ovison writes that the designs of French engineer Pierre-Charles L'Enfant and planners Andrew Ellicott and James McMillan, all of whom were Masons, included Masonic symbolism. Yeah, lots of Egyptian eyes in the buildings of the Federal Reserve, the Library of Congress, and other Washington landmarks. And he also notes the importance of the astrological sign of Virgo to the Masons. Yeah, it's all kind of lined up. You look to the book, it'll give you a whole thing on the power of Virgo, that it was intended. You know, the power of feminine language craft is built in there. And it does claim that the triangle formed by the Capitol, the White House, and the Washington Monument represent the stars of the Virgo constellation. So when we were speaking, I said, okay, so there's that. And you said, right, and all the museums and the objects in the museums. And I go, ooh, what a good idea. The Museum of the Native American is full of powerful things. The reflecting pool, right? So does that, do you have a response to such a thing? Anything that you'd like us to focus our attention on, to invite to come alive?
So I for some reason, the eyes, I'm curious about the eyes, and I'm curious, what's catching my attention is I wonder who is watching. And there may be a... now my computer, all of a sudden, as I say that, my computer is starting to psychedelicize. So things are flashing across my screen. So I'm wondering about who's watching through those eyes, and thinking about a dream I had last night about a spark of some great consciousness. Some kind of universal consciousness. So I'm wondering also about the eyes and intention. So I'll just say a little bit more about intention, which I'm sure a lot of people know about how intention works. But one of the little asides that is that I actually have done a little bit of research on group work to see how group work can affect the coherence of the quantum field. And one of the people who is helping me with this is a researcher in consciousness at a division of the University of Virginia. And he's done a lot of research. And one of the things that he believes is that intention really is the carrier wave for action. And that carrier wave, which holds the intention, is actually like it's coming into the physical world and activating things. So those are my thoughts at the moment, but I'm wondering who's watching, whose eyes are those?
Right, well, yeah, we don't know. I mean, the Egyptians were very gifted at thought forms, very gifted. And a friend of mine, a wonderful artist, was copying from a postcard the Egyptian god Ptah. And he said, and he's quite a credible Pisces, he said there was an eye that appeared in the ceiling corner of the room scanning him, and with a clear, like, who are you? And he said, I'm an artist, and I'm copying your work. And he said the eye scanned and was like, okay, and withdrew. I lived in a sketchy neighborhood in D.C., it was a wonderful but lots of grime and being broken into, and my car battery was stolen and everything, you know. I just put a little sign in the car that said, this car protected by Egyptian thought forms. was never bothered again. Never bothered again. Okay, anyway, so thank you.
That's
so, yeah,
your intention.
Who's watching?
Your intention was that you be protected, that your car be protected and safe where it was. So it's just, to me, it's like a fun question to ask when you come upon these symbols is, oh, who is that? Who's watching? Who is my ally in this particular endeavor? And if our endeavor in the moment is the sacrament of impeachment, who can our allies be in that?
So we're all remembering everything we've ever done, kind of coming alive. And I was in a quite kind of sketchy and crackpot mystery school in London, but it had some benefits to the thing. But I think we really did use tinfoil hats. But we were imagining, in a reverie in Egypt, and we would find a statue that we felt kinned with, and then we would imagine opening our eyes in the statue and gazing out, and then reporting on what we saw. It was very interesting. It was very interesting. And I did just go to a fantastic Egyptian exhibit in Richmond. It's closed now, but it was of sunken Egyptian city from 2,000 more years ago. And it was the museum. We'll come back to museums, because they are temples to the muse. And this really was. Everything was staged with such powerful atmospheric reverence, and there was a fantastic statue of Osiris just gazing directly as one. And here's the thing: it was like a positive tractor beam, not the internet where you can't turn off your phone, but it was like with my wonderful friend, we just found ourselves walking in rhythm together towards this statue without think, just and the gaze. The gaze, and it's like, yes, come in, positive leadership, come in the thing. But and then, you know,
that
we both
makes
have
me think, Caroline, of Ma'at. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes.
The weighing of the heart, I believe, where your heart is weighed against a feather in the scales of justice, as it were. And I'm wondering if that truth, did one live a true life, a life that was clear and according to one's principles, I guess is how you could say that. And I'm wondering if that can be an ally in the sacrament, because really that's the essence of what all of the articles, in this case, the singular article of impeachment are circling around. It's truth.
Right.
So maybe we can call in Ma'at to help us out.
Yeah, no, that's super great. And the one time I went to Egypt, when I landed in the sort of landing hotel near the airport, that theme, which I later got a copy of the heart being weighed against a feather, was in my room. It was in my room as a physical presence, and I went through the whole night, feeling, where had I been churlish or whatever, and who had been churlish to me, and lightening, forgive self and apologize and forgive others, and it's like, it's Anubis, and we love Ma'at, goddess of truth. We're invoking her, absolutely. And Anubis leads the soul to a scale, right, where our heart is weighed against a feather, and if it's heavier than a feather, there's Nom Nom, the alligator god, who eats it, right? But if our heart is lighter than a feather, then we are guided, Anubis and Ma'at, to the greater realms of evolutionary underworld adventure, right? And it's, it's not like it's only at the end of our life. It's really every moment. And with the internet, we all get to be befoibled. I had found myself being grumpy about people being grumpy, right? And it can go on forever, going, I'm grumpy. And then finding myself somehow, into a polarity conversation in which I had no interest. It's like, no, wait, how did this conversation even go this way? Just, no, let me back out. There we go. And lighten heart, which of course is discerning but not judging. And I think that's part of, our being guided, no rules but guidelines, you know, to spiral, to be agents of spiraling out of polarity, interested in liberating the entire circumstance, you know, because I had also been, you know, well, we're imperfect and we get to still be imperfect, but I was going, oh, the despotism of nyanya. And what I meant was nyanya is like, you go, look, here's this good thing happening. Nyanya, yeah, but these other things are terrible. And I go, oh, the despotism of nyanya has good-hearted progressives, you know, by the scales of justice going nyanya. Anyway, so I want to throw the despotism of nyanya and yeah, but, you know, into the cauldron, meaning it's wonderful to see and to be deeply creatively suspicious of many things, but not in a polarity to obscure the good. You know, and mentioning good things, we discourage the bad, we encourage the good. And where I want to toss back to you is, you know, both you and I have Scorpio midheaven overhead, you know, and we're born in D.C. And one thought is that Washington, D.C. is a Scorpio city because it's all about use and abuse of collective power. And it's a quirky city because there are many interesting things, you know, but they're hidden. And wherever you see power, that's where it's not, right? And then, you know, I was thinking of, you know, growing up with secrets, and a family with secrets gives birth to a detective, and a culture with secrets gives birth to esoteric detectives within us all, right? Because it's like, ooh, something to be revealed. Right, something to be revealed, and you'd been mentioning about how you'd wanted in this great hour we have here to honor, right? Well, like my friend said, you know, now is a time when evil forgot to hide. You wanted to honor and celebrate how visible creepitude is, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely, and the only thing I want to bring in about polarities and why it might be interesting to dance with them is that sense of seeing the other side, because in many ways that's what polarities can do. It divides things so that you can not necessarily divide and conquer, but divide and understand. So there's your side, and then there's another side. And if you can shapeshift into the energy and the experience of the other side, then there's a possibility for learning. And I love what you're saying about Washington and hidden power, and to bring it back to the Capitol and the springs. I think we were talking a few days ago about the river beneath the river, mm-hmm. And the health of the hidden river reflecting the state and the condition of the more visible river. And I think that is something very interesting to contemplate in this city that is hidden, where things are not as they seem. And when polarities arise, perhaps something that can be instructive is to inhabit the polarities and then rise above them and see what happens. Kind of be, I think we were also talking about the eagle and the condor, that an old myth from the southern hemisphere of the eagle and the condor coming together and heralding a new age. Well, both of those birds are have an incredible sense of perspective. And I think that in so much as polarities can be instructive, it's the perspective that comes together when you're flying above the polarity that helps you understand in a deep way what's going on in that deep level of experience of that river, and kind of taking a little bit, you know, taking a sounding or taking a little vial of the river water and seeing how healthy it might be.
Right. Yeah, that the health of the visible river depends on the health of the invisible river, said the scientist in a great New York Times science article years ago. That I love that, right? And part of the function of the sort of detective or Scorpio part of all of us, right, is to mediate on behalf of the visible human community with the invisible, you know, around everything, you know, is a field, right? So I love that. And even when you mention eagle and condor, I just want to honor from years ago when I was in a project in Rhode Island that was government funded. I was smuggled in as the cymbalist, but we worked with troubled youth who had gang members and had done some bad things and everything. So we were to teach them non-economic forms of power, and one was imagining and to find their power animals, right? And so they were cynical at first and then really, really gifted. And this one lad, and I wish him well wherever he is, he was the baddest of the bad and therefore very lovable in many ways. And he said, okay, I've got my animals. It's a snake who lives 100 miles beneath the surface of the earth. And this was him. And it sees an eagle overhead, and it knows that they were once one thing, and they have to get back together for the sake of creation. We were like, whoa!
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You got it.
Yeah, he'd never been praised for anything. We were like so impressed. It's like, wow. So, yes, there's that. Well, we have a precious minute left. I want to really turn it to where whatever you want to do, the holly tree, the security cameras, anything you want to do in this, and we can think of this as part one because there's richness here, but maybe a blessing to all of our team to direct attention
yes.
or whatever
yes.
amuses you.
Yes. I'm feeling into being back in Washington, in the city, and really honoring the things that I didn't appreciate that then. I was young and reckless, and I didn't know. I wasn't experienced in the way I am now. And I really want to be that bridge and facilitate that connection between the seen and the unseen worlds, the intention of the heart and its practice and its flourishing in the regular three-dimensional consensus reality world, and helping to be that medial agent so that the scales of justice can be balanced. So to
yes.
all of the great powers that have joined us today, invoked by all, both of us and by those who have been listening and will listen, I give a deep bow to all of that.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Elaine Ramos. Her website is elaineramos.com. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, great Skookum board op. And remember, everybody, all fellow citizens and tricksters, you know, to animate the statues around yourselves, too. Again, you know, forming partnerships with what we love. It's experiment time. Thank you, team. CoyoteNetworkNews.com for more information. And we will reconvene next week.